Good afternoon. Welcome to The Scoop. I'm your host, Janelle Irwin. Sean Canaan is our engineer today, and he will be wrangling the phones. The number to call is 813-239-9663. On the slate today, we'll be speaking with former Pinellas County Commissioner Ken Welch about his bid for St. Petersburg mayor and issues facing the city as he seeks to be its next leader. If you have questions for Mr. Welch, you can email them to me at Janelle, that's J-A-N-E-L-L-E, at floridapolitics.com. Or, as usual, to DJ at WMNF.org. You can also text me at 813-433-0885 or tweet your questions to me at the Twitter handle at Janelle Irwin FL. Ken Welch, welcome to the show.
Janelle, it's great to be with you. Hope you're doing well.
I am. This is my first time doing a show over Zoom, so hopefully we get through this without any gremlins.
We'll see. We'll knock on wood.
Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to join us today. I want to open it up with, obviously, this is a very competitive race to replace current Mayor Rick Kreisman, who's facing term limits. Why don't you just start by telling us a little bit about your campaign platform and your priorities if elected?
Well, my platform is that we need to maintain what's made St. Pete a great place to live, work, play, and retire in. I'm third generation St. Pete, a proud Lakewood Spartan and USF St. Pete grad. Went away to FAMU and always knew I'd come back home. We've come so far as a city. You know, we're seeing so much new growth. I just want to make sure we maintain the character of St. Pete, that it remains affordable for folks, and that we maintain the authenticity that makes St. Pete great. And I can tell you that, you know, growth in and of itself is not progress. In order to truly achieve progress, you know, every neighborhood has to feel that they're a part of that progress and not that they're being displaced by all the new growth that we're seeing. And so, you know, the elements of that are important to me is housing affordability. You know, the average median income is about $49,000 or about $24 an hour. We need to make sure we're focusing on housing for folks that make, you know, the folks that are in that 50% of the people who are below that 49,000, you know, folks making $19 an hour, $16 an hour. And I've done that as a county commissioner. I want to make sure that we're intentional about getting those new affordable housing units on the ground. I also want to make sure that our neighborhoods are safe. You know, I've talked to neighborhood associations, and you may have read or even reported that, you know, I drove Uber and Lyft for 1,000 rides. So I've been to every neighborhood, every part of our city, and I know that we've got some safety issues in our neighborhoods. There have been 18 murders when I held my youth summit to hear from young people about what's happening. There have been more murders since then, unfortunately. And then our infrastructure, you know, we've got to continue the path that Mayor Kreisman has put us on to invest in our infrastructure, you know, our pipes and our plants, so we can handle not only the new growth, but the impacts of climate change and sea level rise. So all of that means to me inclusive progress, and that's the kind of leadership and partnership I want to bring to the mayor's office. Are you on mute?
I'm going to touch on some of those issues that you brought up. But before I do, just a little bit of politicking here. So
sure.
The most recent poll from St. Pete Polls has you leading the crowded field of candidates in this race, both in the primary and in a hypothetical matchup against either city council members, Robert Blackman or Darden Rice. But of course, being the leader comes with some downsides. For example, you faced a lot of name checks at the first televised debate of the race a few weeks ago from your opponents. So how do you feel about the position you're in right now, and how do you plan to weather those inevitable attacks?
Well, I think you stay focused on the messaging. You know, I was one of Joe Biden's 29 Florida delegates, and so I was closely aligned with his campaign and watched him. You know, Joe took a lot of fire in the debates. President Obama took a lot of fire in his debates. You can't let that deter you. And frankly, I mean, a lot of the fire is just silliness. And I think folks are tired of that level of nonsense in our politics. We've got serious issues that we need to face, whether it's affordability or the violence that we're seeing in some of our neighborhoods or our infrastructure or just the ability to folks to afford to rent an apartment in St. Pete. And so I think folks want us to focus on the message and the real issues. That's what I've always been about, kind of a boring, straightforward, you know, get it done person. And that's what I'll continue to be. The politics will take care of itself. I've learned over 5 terms on the commission and watching my dad, who was a 3-term city council member, that if you focus on doing the things you're supposed to do, focus on the job, the politics will really take care of itself.
If you're just tuning in to The Scoop on WMNF Community Radio, I am Janelle Irwin, and we are speaking with Ken Welch. He is a former Pinellas County Commissioner who is running for St. Petersburg Mayor. I want to touch now on one of the issues that you briefly mentioned in your opening there, and that relates to Tropicana Field. It's obviously one of the biggest issues facing the city as plans to redevelop the massive 86-acre lot take shape. It's something that we've talked about extensively on the show, particularly as it relates to ensuring any redevelopment at the site honors the Black community that was displaced in the late 70s and 80s when the stadium was first built. How do your plans for the site differ from your opponents?
Well, I think that this is a generational opportunity, you know, and I think where it differs is I actually grew up on the gas plant site. My grandfather's business was right at Fifth Avenue and 16th Street. And you'll see that in some of my materials and on my first commercial that right at Fifth Avenue and 16th was his woodyard. My first job as a kid. And he was displaced for the interstate for I-175. A few years later, in a couple of blocks away, our family church prayer tower had to move for the pursuit of baseball, along with dozens of churches, businesses, 800 people in that area were moved. And my father happened to be the city council member for the district at that time. And so he was initially opposed to it because, you know, given what had happened to his father, his question was, why is the African-American community always asked to sacrifice in the name of progress? And then remember that because of redlining, that area was the only place that African-Americans had actually lived. So they were told you had to live here. And then after they build a community, then they're told they have to displace twice for progress. And so, ultimately, the promise of jobs and economic development for the community and fair reimbursement for those folks who had to move convinced my father to support that. Now, 35 years later, the jobs, the economic development has not come. You've got 86 acres of asphalt around the Trop. Most of the commerce happens inside the Trop. Folks drive there, walk in, spend their money, get back in their cars and go home. And so now we have the opportunity after 35 plus years to make sure that those promises are fulfilled. So to me, that's the priority, that we have equitable development, that we have housing that's affordable, that we have jobs, that we honor the history of the gas plant and Tropicana Field, that we actually live the things we're talking about. You know, we talk about equity, but are we intentional in equity? And so I want to make sure all those things and building the right infrastructure and transportation connections, all of those are part of that. But the way you do that, I think, is being intentional. And the community benefits agreement that would make sure that where there's city investment for large developments, that there is tangible community benefit in terms of a payment into a fund or housing or some other tangible benefit. You know, that stalled in council when it first came in March. And I wrote 2 letters to the council and the mayor and fully supporting the mayor administration's proposal. That's an opportunity to be intentional about equity. And I think that needs to carry through this whole Tropicana Field redevelopment. The Rays are an important part of it. And as a county commissioner, I've stayed in contact with the Rays. In fact, I led the effort to secure a 1 cent of the county's bed tax, the tourist tax, to help support a new Rays stadium. But they have to come to the table with substantial investment And to me, they are an important part of it, but they're not the priority. The priority is jobs, economic development, and equitable development going forward. And I hope the Rays can be a part of that.
Staying on that for just a second here, some of the proposals that we have seen so far for development plans of the site, one of them, for example, includes a history walk. There's been some people who have kind of complained that that's maybe not going quite far enough, which sounds kind of like what you're trying to say here. Can you elaborate at all on what is enough?
Sure, I can elaborate. Yeah. Yes, I can elaborate. And again, these are thoughts, concepts, but I'll let you know that in every one of my conversations with the Rays and with the various development groups, I've made it clear that this is a priority. And every one of those entities has agreed that it should be a priority. You know, Janelle, I've been able to lead some pretty big issues, whether it's the housing trust fund that we created with the county when I was chairman. And that's been funded with more than $100 million and put more than 4,000 units of affordable housing on the ground, or leading the effort to create the South St. Pete CRA, which was the first in the county's history. We had to change policy to do that, and that is going to bring in over $100 million for poverty reduction. The county had never done that. I believe we can do the same thing with Tropicana Field by having that kind of partnership and straightforward communication. I believe it needs to be something as significant as a substantial community benefits agreement that brings real resources to the communities that were impacted, the communities in South St. Pete. An obvious link would be helping to support the new Woodson African-American Museum of Florida. That's an obvious link, and they will need some capital funding. I think a smart developer would include that, but that's a tangible way to fund in the City of the Arts a museum that not only pays tribute to the history of the gas plant and the African-American contributions in St. Pete and Pinellas, but our contributions worldwide. So I think there are some innovative ways that we can do that. And I've stated I fully support the Woodson going forward. It needs to be substantial. You know, I supported more than $250 million of projects like the Dolly and the Tropicana Field and Ruth Eckerd that we funded through the bed tax. And so me funding the Woodson makes sense and is reasonable. But I believe we can get it done by having that kind of straightforward communication. And I've got a track record. And if you just look at my endorsements, all those partners from every stripe, Republican, Democrat, Black, White, North, South, when you work together with folks, you can get things done. And that's why I'm excited about the possibilities now with the TROP and making it a meaningful tribute to the African-American community.
We have a question from a listener that came in that I'm going to get to in just a second, but this is somewhat related to what we're currently talking about. So before I get to that, I want to just ask one more question of my own here. You absolutely cannot have a conversation about racial equality without also talking about the South Side, right? You grew up down there. I grew up down there. we're both Lakewood people.
Well, salt of the earth.
go Spartans.
There you go.
But particularly neighborhoods around Tangerine Plaza that for years have gone without access to a local grocery store and healthy food. It's been a priority in the current administration and even the Bill Foster administration before that. Yet two grocery stores have tried and failed to operate in the neighborhood. How would you address the issue and end the long era of the area being a food desert?
Well, I think we have to innovate, and the Chrysler administration does have a proposal that they're working with now to bring a, for lack of a better word, boutique grocer to that area. I think it's an issue of foot traffic, of the economic wherewithal of folks who live in the area. That's why the CRA is so important, to help folks move out of generational poverty and reduce the poverty rate in that area. I also think the housing developments like Sankofa, just north of that, and further north are going to bring additional folks to the area. So and transportation is another factor. So I think all those issues, requires a holistic approach. And so I think that is the long-term view is to get a successful grocer in that area. In the interim, though, one of the impacts from the CRA recreated is the urban youth farm just down the street at Enoch Davis Center. You know, I think there are ways to bring fresh fruits and vegetables and healthy products into the area. Someone even mentioned to me, why don't you subsidize some of the corner stores to carry healthier items? I think all those things need to be on the table. It can't just be looking at getting a grocer. It's what are the other things that we can do? And I view that as what I call an opportunity agenda. Let's look at everything we can do using those CRA dollars that last year were $6 million. And there are 25 more years that those dollars will come in. We've got resources. We've got tools to do that. I think we need to be innovative and bring everyone to the table and listen to all the ideas. That's part of my approach, is being inclusive and in touch and listening to all the ideas that are out there.
You mentioned transportation, and that touches on a listener question from David in Tampa, who wants to know on how you'll promote a more regional approach to mass transit in the Tampa Bay area.
Well, you know, I bear the scars of working on transit for a long time. If folks remember Greenlight Pinellas, I was chair of PSTA when we brought that forward. And look, it won in, well, it did not win. It came in at 49.something% in my county commission district in the South. But it was controversial because of the rail component and some other things. But what it did is it created the first community bus plan. It showed how underfunded we are, both in Pinellas and Hillsborough County. We've got the two most underfunded public transit systems in the United States. You can't build effective regional transit if you don't fund the basic fundamental bus services. But it also showed proof of concept for bus rapid transit. And even the light rail would have been bus rapid transit, which is higher frequency bus travel, where you use, you use an app to board it. It's got Wi-Fi on it. It's a higher level of service. It runs every 15 minutes. And that's what's going on the First Avenues on the Sunrunner BRT. So Greenlight helped us get to that point. Working with FDOT, and I've served on the Ford Pinellas and T Barta and all the regional transportation agencies, the new Howard Franklin will have the underpinning to support light rail that will connect St. Pete to Tampa. We'll run BRT over that in the interim. And so we will have those connections between St. Pete, Tampa, with premium transit. But what both sides of the bay have to do, and Hillsborough already did it, is pass that 1% tax to fund transit. Now, Hillsborough is going to have to go back and do it again because they had some technical issues. But I think Pinellas needs to do that as well to get our bus service up to where it needs to be, where it runs frequently every 15 minutes or so, where it runs later at night, where it runs on weekends, so folks can actually use the bus system as their main means of transit.
If you're just tuning in to The Scoop on WMNF Community Radio, I'm Janelle Irwin, and we are joined by former Pinellas County Commissioner Ken Welch, who is running for St. Petersburg mayor, discussing his race on that side of the bay. We're going to be getting to the phones here in just a few minutes. The number to call is 813-239-9663. So go ahead and get your call in there before we start getting busy lines. Another question, and this is something that's really important to the entire region, not just the city of St. Petersburg, but obviously you guys are feeling the effects full bore being right on Tampa Bay, and that's obviously red tide. As a mayor, there's not too much that you can do over something that, you know, scientists have repeatedly said is a naturally occurring phenomenon, but can be exacerbated by certain environmental impacts. As mayor, what would you like to see done to mitigate the frequency of red tide outbreaks, and then if they do occur, to reduce their effects on the community as a whole?
Well, you know, it has been difficult. I've dealt with red tide as a commissioner. And, you know, our entire community dealt with the pandemic. We come out of that and now we get hit by red tide. You know, out of all of that, it shows, number one, we have to be ultra sensitive of our environmental impacts. You know, that's why we passed the fertilizer ordinance a few years back to, you know, reduce the nitrogen content in our waterways. We have to make sure we're invested in our infrastructure so we don't have the sewage overflows. So doing everything that we can not to contribute to the problem. And a lot of that means investing in our infrastructure. It means having policies that respect and protect our environment. But it also means listening to the facts and the science. And we did that during the pandemic. You know, we listened to the health experts. You know, Piney Point, you know, was a tragedy waiting to happen. And, you know, I'm not a scientist, but the fact we're having this so soon after that event, you know, I still want to see the details on it. But in my view, they're connected. And so when we've got those kind of issues, you know, we need local governments and the state to act responsibly. That did not happen with the Piney Point issue. And there are other issues where we're just not being environmentally responsible. That takes leadership from the state, and the state seems to be in a preemption mode. Even trying to preempt, you know, what cities and local governments can do with tree ordinances, for example. And they keep reaching down, trying to prevent, you know, home rule. And we need to continue to fight that. I fought that as a county commissioner for 20 years. You know, I debated the incoming Speaker of the House and Senate president a few years ago when they wanted to open up oil drilling in Florida waters. And so, you know, I've got a track record of doing that. I'll continue to use that bully pulpit in addition to doing everything that we can do locally to protect our infrastructure and to have the right kind of environmental policies.
You mentioned working with the state. That's an important part of a lot of your duties that you would have as mayor. Mm-hmm. But we've seen over the past several years that sometimes working with the state can be difficult. There's a constant sort of attack on home rule with all of these preemption bills coming down. Speaking specifically to the environment and environmental issues, but just broadly on anything in general, how would you work with a Tallahassee that seems to have taken more of a we know better sort of stance against local governments?
Well, look, you just have to stick to the facts and speak truth. Now, the way that we work locally is we come together on issues. And so back to that oil drilling reference, you know, folks in Pinellas County knew that whether you were red or blue, drilling close to us made no sense whatsoever. It's bad for the environment. And if we get one drop of oil on our shores, it's bad for our economy. And so we looked at the issue based on the impact to our community. The same way when, you know, talk of USF St. Pete consolidation happened. You know, you had the chamber, the county commission, the city council, the mayor, all saying that's going to impact access to education for local students and particularly for minorities. And so we spoke truth to power. They did that anyway. And it resulted in a couple of semesters ago having one black freshman in the entire incoming class. And so you just have to speak truth to power, whether it's Medicaid expansion, you know, if the and, you know, I try to work with the legislature when I can. Like bringing down infrastructure money from the feds. I think that's something we can work together on. But look, if you're going to try to limit access to the ballot, if you're going to try to limit voting access, as the legislature did this time for no reason whatsoever, you had 67 election supervisors saying we had the best election in 2020 in a pandemic in our history, and the legislature still moved to restrict voting. If you have the legislature restricting the right of returning citizens who serve their time to get their civil rights back, then, you know, I've got no choice but to stand up to that. And so we'll work together when we can, but there are certain issues where you're just going to have to make a stand against what the powers that be are doing in Tallahassee.
One of the issues that I know you worked on as a county commissioner, this was, I don't know, it had to have been 7, 8, 9 years ago, something crazy. The backyard gun range issue. And this was in your neighborhood, no less.
Oh, man, it was.
for those who don't remember, I'm just going to give a quick recap here. There was a gentleman who decided that he was going to erect a makeshift background to have some target practice in his backyard using sand and pallets. This is not safe. Do not try this at home, kids. And sure enough, he goes out there and he starts shooting at this thing. And everybody was in an uproar about it. But there was nothing that the city of St. Pete could do because of the preemption laws on the book that are still on the book that keep local governments from implementing any sort of gun ordinances that are more strict than what the state prescribes. And that really tied the city's hands. I know you worked with Senator Daryl Roussan on this that year on a bill that ultimately said you can't have backyard gun ranges. But that's something that's still a problem for local government officials. And it's been made even more egregious in recent years with legislation that imposes harsh fines for any attempts to do anything gun related. What do you do about that in a city that tends to think a little bit differently than Tallahassee?
Well, that one was a nightmare. And I still have that neighbor, by the way. And that one was, I had actually, imagine going to windows in your house and looking to make sure you're not in the gun line, you know, the travel line of a bullet that might come from that house. And we are. And then have Tallahassee tell you can absolutely do nothing about it. And so I think, you know, we still have to use the bully pulpit. That's what we did in that case. The neighborhood came together and, you know, talked to our state representatives and said, you know, this is outrageous. It doesn't make any common sense. And we'll continue to have to do that. I mean, there are threats to, you know, even jail or remove from office any local official that does anything on guns is an intimidation tactic. And we'll still have to speak out. I know my good friend Les Miller in Hillsborough wanted to challenge that last year or maybe the year before that. But we have to continue to speak on those issues that have an impact. And in some cases, you have to really kind of defy those threats and intimidation when you've got a local threat to life and health and safety.
Well, Mr. Welch, I know that you are short on time. Do you have time to take a quick call from a caller?
Absolutely.
All right. Let's go to Julia in Tampa. Julia, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Can I digress to the transportation issues in Hillsborough County for a minute?
Okay. Sure, go ahead.
I stole my car about 2 years ago and have been trying to get around by public transportation ever since. And I'm telling you, it is a nightmare. I have lived in D.C., New York, Maryland, in New Jersey, Philadelphia. I have never seen a bus transportation system run this poorly. It will do things like leave you at a bus stop for an hour and a half, 2 hours, waiting for a bus to come, and you call them. They say, we don't have enough drivers. Whose issue is that, and how do you resolve that? Why don't you have backup drivers? I don't understand what's going on with the public transportation system here, and it happens really, really frequently. I was stranded at a bus stop for an hour and a half waiting for a bus that didn't come. And when I called the one bus away, they said it was coming. When I called the people, they said it was coming, and none of it showed up. So I'm just saying, they say, I've talked several times with the people at HART, and they say, well, we don't have enough ridership. And I'm like, the reason you don't have enough ridership is because people can't afford to be late for work. Okay, waiting for a bus that's not going to show up. It's like a catch-22. Can't they get some consultants from New York or someplace to come down here and fix this transportation system? Didn't they collect money? I understand they collected like a 2-cent tax for a year or two, and nothing seems to have changed.
Well, Julia, that thank you for bringing that up, and I'm sorry that you're having issues. We're gonna harp on that for a second. So thank you for bringing it up. And let me just say before I turn it over to you, Mr. Welch, you know, obviously you can't do anything about what's going on in Hillsborough County with their transportation system, and you don't have much control over what happens with Pinellas County's transit system because it's largely a county issue, but. You've been in that role before. You've sat in that seat and you've made those decisions. What's going wrong and what are we, I know you already kind of tackled this a little bit, but maybe just elaborate, you know, how can we solve these problems that have been stagnant for so, so long?
Well, you know, I've served on our bus system board, PSTA, for 10 years and served as chair. And I've heard this complaint many times, and it's an issue of us. You get what you pay for. And so the reason we don't have enough buses, that they only run every hour instead of every 15 minutes, that a lot of them, and this is one of my pet peeves, there's no place for people to even sit down. There's no shelter. Folks are just standing out in the hot sun or rain, is because we haven't funded it. In Pinellas County, for example, there are cities who don't pay anything into the bus system property tax base, wealthy cities that don't pay into it. And we can't get the special act changed because of politics. Hart is the same way. They did pass that additional funding through a referendum, but the dollars were never applied because of a lawsuit from a county commissioner who challenged it. And it eventually got thrown out. And so you've got two of the, like I said, the most underfunded bus systems in the United States right here in Hillsborough County and Pinellas County. We need to go back to the ballot, you know, when the economy has recovered sufficiently in both Pinellas and Hillsborough for that 1% tax that will fully fund not only the bus system, but it'll fund roads and trails and other transportation amenities as well. We don't compare well to any other large city or area, including Orlando or Miami-Dade, because we haven't invested. And that's why folks that can make the choice to take the bus or not don't make that choice, because they can't wait an hour or an hour and a half for a bus. But that's what it'll take. We need to invest in both systems to get them up to where they need to be to support a major metropolitan area.
All right. Well, Ken, thank you again so much for taking time out of what I'm sure is a very, very busy day of campaigning and all sorts of fun
stuff. Thank you.
I really appreciate you sharing your insights with us, and hopefully we can have you on again sometime before the election.
Anytime, Janelle. It's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Ken.
All right. Bye.
For those of you just tuning in, we have been speaking with former Pinellas County Commissioner Ken Welch, who is running for St. Petersburg mayor. He is one of several candidates who are running to replace current mayor Rick Kreisman. We are going to be hosting other candidates as the campaign moves forward. We're going to be reaching out to City Council Member Darden Rice and City Council Member Robert Blackman, who are among the top tier candidates in the race. So stay tuned for future interviews with those candidates as well. We're going to be taking some calls here in just a second. So if you are on hold, please stay there. I will get to you in just a second, but we are going to take a short break before we continue this conversation.
The world. I'm afraid I can't help it. Times is there. Johnny wants to see in cars. Jim's in America. Is there and Johnny wants in cars. Jim's in America. Jim's in America. I'm afraid of Americans. I'm afraid of the world. I'm afraid I can't help it.
All right. Welcome back to The Scoop. I'm your host, Janelle Irwin. If you're just tuning in and you would like to join our conversation, the number to call is 813-239-9663. You can also email us at dj@wmnf.org. Earlier in the show, we were speaking with former Pinellas County Commissioner Ken Welch about his bid for St. Petersburg mayor. Just to recap a little bit of that conversation, we touched on various different topics, including one of the biggest issues in the race, which pertains to the redevelopment of the Tropicana Field site and plans to ensure that the Black community displaced by the stadium's construction in the late 70s and into the 80s honors the community that was displaced then. So that's certainly something that we've been talking about a lot on the show that we can continue the conversation on. Transportation is a big issue affecting the entire region, not just the city of St. Petersburg. We touched on that a little bit. The food desert situation in South St. Petersburg, that came up. So any of those topics that you'd like to touch on, again, the number is 813-239-9663. Let's go now to Jay in St. Pete. Jay, what's on your mind?
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, nice to get on here. Thank you very much for your show and information from Ken. I don't live in the city, so I hope Ken the best in his bid for mayor. I wanted to bring up another thing, an announcement, if I could. We have a demonstration for every week at the Samuel Gibbons Courthouse at from 10:30 to 11:30 and on Tuesdays. And you can sign it on deadlinefordemocracy.org, and you can sign up for that. And then there's another demonstration coming up on Saturday evening at 8 o'clock, Candlelight Vigil. And that's going to be at South St. Petersburg, Saturday the 17th. And it's Good Trouble, Candlelight Vigil for Democracy for John Lewis. Lewis was up for that. Just wanted to mention that to you.
All right, Jay. Thanks for letting us know about that event. We appreciate it. You have a wonderful rest of your day. Thanks for the call.
Thank you very much, Janelle.
All right. One of the issues that we also spoke with former Pinellas County Commissioner Ken Welch about on the show today was red tide. I tend to focus so much on politics on this show, and red tide, I think sometimes people ignore just how political the issue can be. It was brought up, Mr. Welch mentioned that he believes that the Piney Point, it's a shuttered phosphate plant, that leak contributed to red tide. A lot of people agree with him. The science on it isn't crystal clear, but there is certainly plenty of speculation. And so now we're seeing throughout the Tampa Bay area these massive red tide outbreaks. Downtown St. Petersburg, which is on Tampa Bay, is scooping up dead fish by the tons. The smell, some have reported, is unbearable. The Tampa side is also reporting similar problems. The Gulf beaches from as far north as Fred Howard Park and Palm Harbor, it's all the way down to Fort DeSoto. They're experiencing intermittent problems with red tide. I'm not too far from the beach myself. I often ride my bike over to go for long walks, and it's gotten to the point where it's just absolutely unbearable. The respiratory irritation is really bad. So that's something that I think our area is really having a hard time with right now. Curious to know what your guys' thoughts are on that. And if you, have you been to the beach? Have you seen the situation on the ground? What have you seen? I'd love to hear from you. The number again is 813-239-9663. So on the issue of Piney Point, the state has dedicated millions of dollars, $200 million to clean up that site so that we don't have these problems again with millions and millions and millions of gallons of wastewater being pumped into Tampa Bay to avoid bigger catastrophe, which is what we saw in Piney Point earlier this spring. So it's a little frustrating to think that a plant that was privately run, the company filed for bankruptcy, and now taxpayers are on the hook for taking those cleanup efforts. So that's certainly something that folks are very frustrated about. I want to mention again on the St. Petersburg mayor's race, just so it doesn't seem like we're favoring any candidates over any others. There are numerous candidates running. I mentioned Darden Rice and Robert Blackman. They are both St. Petersburg City Council members who are in the race. They are among the top tier of candidates. Ken Welch is polling at the top of all of them, but not by a whole lot. Both Darden Rice and Robert Blackman are just a snippet behind him. Wengay Newton, who is a former state representative and a former city council member, is also in that pack of the top four. So the interesting thing about this race is that the primary election, which is in August, that is a top two primary. So you will have the top two vote getters in that race move on to the general election on November 2nd, provided none of the candidates gets more than 50% of the vote, which is highly unlikely when you're looking at that many competitive candidates in the race, right? So with Ken Welch leading the pack and three other people nipping at his heels, you're kind of watching who were the top two at this point, not necessarily who's at the very top. And you end up with a question of politics. And I didn't bring this up with Mr. Welch because it's a nonpartisan race and they're not permitted as candidates to talk about their political affiliation. But Welch is a Democrat. Darden Rice is a Democrat. Wengay Newton is a Democrat. Robert Blackman is a Republican. So what we're kind of watching here is, are you going to have voters who are of a more conservative mindset siding with Blackman as a candidate and kind of being a spoiler in that top two scenario, which before he entered the race had been between Ken Welch and Darden Rice. Likewise, Wengay Newton, though he's a registered Democrat, he's often sided with Republicans on issues before. And 4 years ago, when Rick Baker was running for mayor against Rick Kreisman, Wengay Newton actually backed Rick Baker, who's a Republican. So there's also a question of, does he pull some of that conservative vote as well? There's also an issue of race in the race, with Ken Welch and Wengay Newton being the only Black candidates in the race. So do they split the African-American vote? So there's just a lot of numbers and sort of demographics to watch to see what that happens. I'd love to get into all of this. We've only got about 10 minutes left here in the show. The number to call if you want to get in on the queue is 813-239-9663. Let's go to Jack in Dover. Jack, what's on your mind?
Hi, Janelle. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
Another great show. I just wish that you would have somehow managed to connect a little bit more with Mr. Welch. I enjoyed everything that he said, except I wanted him to really go to bat, you know, for all the dead fish and the red tide and stuff, and just eliminate Piney Point as a problem. Don't sit around and wait again for another study. I mean, even if it just slightly contributes to the problem. The problem is at a point now where it's so bad that just eliminate Piney Point as a possibility. Drain it. Get rid of it. You know, take the dirty water somewhere else. You know, it's too bad right now.
Well, so a question for you, Jack. I mean, how would you propose that somebody like Ken Welch do that. I mean, right now, he's not even an elected official. If he were elected mayor, his abilities are pretty limited as to what he can do as a city mayor. It's an issue that kind of falls more on state lines. So, I mean, what do you want him to say or do?
Well, since it is a tax...
Or anybody running for mayor.
anybody, I would say it's like when you've got your dream job and yet you post out for another job and you're working for a major corporation and you go on your interview and they ask you, how would you build the space shuttle? I feel like you just asked me that question. And it's not about how or if I would. Nobody wants to hear me say how I would go about doing something. That's not the issue here. Like you said, it's political. And politics is nothing but money. So whoever gets the job is going to have to go to whoever the biggest corporate taxpayers are and say, listen, this is enough. You know, you guys have to contribute. You have to solve the problem. And you don't tell them how to solve the problem. You just tell them you have to solve the problem. And they'll do it. They will do it. Corporations have that kind of power.
Corporations are what got us into this situation.
Not all of them, Janelle.
The Piney Point, we're talking about Piney Point. You're going to tell me that that a corporation isn't what got us to the point where there was millions and millions of gallons of wastewater being dumped into the bay?
I'm saying that if you can draw a correlation to Piney Point and the conglomerates, like the major banking conglomerates, if you can say that Piney Point is a part of the Citigroup conglomerate, then yeah, I'll agree with you. But you're going to find that it's a part of a smaller piece of pie and that there's no major connection, because if there was a major connection and there was an environmental issue, it would go straight to the Pentagon. And there are environmental attorneys that go around the world, even telling other militaries that you've put these landmines someplace or you've done this or you've done that. You've got to clean up your problem. And they do it. And I can take you to the desk of those people. Not allowed to say their names on the radio, but I know personally environmental attorneys, contract attorneys that have worked for the Pentagon that can solve that Piney Point problem just in the snap of a finger.
And they're okay. All right, Jack, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate your input. Funny that if that's the case, they just haven't done it. I guess they figure, why bother? All right, we're down to about 6 minutes left here in the show. That was a fun conversation, but let's keep moving. Francesco in Sarasota, what's on your mind, my friend?
Yes, hi, Janelle. Janine?
Hi.
Janelle?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, thank you. It's really simple to me. I don't know. We can argue, people argue about climate change and if it's affected by man, and they argue about the red tide and it is affected by man. I don't really see that there's an argument. I mean, we can argue about to what degree it affects the climate, to what degree it affects the incidence of red tide. But I don't think any logical person can think that you can spew either thousands and thousands of tons of garbage into the air or thousands and thousands of tons of garbage into the water, and it's not going to have an effect. What logical machinations do you have to make to assume that?
I'm sorry. So are you saying that it's obvious that climate change is a man-made problem, or are you saying it's not?
It's obvious that to some degree, we can argue about the degree, but that to some degree, it's just a logical conclusion that if you throw garbage into any system, whether it's your plumbing system at home or whether it's the atmosphere or whether it's the ocean, it's going to have
an effect. It's not just logic. It's science. It's been proven. So anybody who says otherwise is just ignoring the science. And I've said it a dozen times on this show and in my previous time slot back when it was midpoint on Friday. I don't entertain anybody who's a climate change denier or who tries to say that it has nothing to do with human impacts because that science just doesn't support that. And we follow science. So what's your, what are you getting at with that?
Well, I'm just getting at that the fact that you don't need to be a scientist. You don't need to be, and that this is all about basically the previous caller, in a different sense, it's all about money because, you know, sure. to make these changes, to affect these changes that would help both the oceans and the climate is going to change the, essentially, to some part, the capitalist structure of, you know, where money is the number one motive in everything that that is done. And that goes back to the corporate issues. But I would like to say one other thing. I live in Sarasota, just on your transportation conversation there. I travel a fair amount. I used to travel more. I'm a musician, and I'm from New York, and I go back up there. You cannot get from Sarasota to Tampa Airport. There's like no way to get there except to get a private car. There's not a bus. There's not a train. There's not being from New York. That's like astounding to me.
It's crazy. Yeah. Crazy. Thank you so much for the call, Francesco. I appreciate your input. And on that note, with the climate change as it relates to red tide, let me just point out that, you know, red tide is a naturally occurring phenomenon. It happens with or without these dumps of polluted wastewater into our waterways. However, climate change absolutely is a contributing factor because red tide, it blooms, it grows in warm water. So we're seeing the Gulf waters getting warmer and warmer earlier and earlier, and that is absolutely contributing to that issue. So just to that point, that's that kind of bringing it full circle. Let's take one more call, and then we're going to be about out of time. Let's go to Kevin. Kevin, what's on your mind?
Hey, I just want to throw in one thing. It may sound a little bizarre, but, you know, in the future, AI is going to be a very important thing. And one of the things I would like to point out is do the people that, it's obvious that AI is going to be smarter than people someday, but they will not allow the people that run this earth to keep polluting it with coal and oil and gas. That's my take. I really... the smart enough.
You say you think that AI is going to stop polluters?
The AI is going to be smarter than humans. And as the point gets, I'm not saying robots are going to take over the world. They're going to be companions just like plants are. We're going to have to learn to live with them. And eventually, they will supersede because they're faster than everything. They're faster than the neurons in our own brains by like a million.
But Kevin, real quick, why would artificial intelligence give a hoot about pollution and the environment?
Because
they're not sentient.
Well, yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. But see, we as people are the ones that are going to set up the artificial intelligence. But it will supersede us soon. And it won't want to have not a place to live. So, I mean, the whole thing about pollution, it's obvious, man. The planet is going down. Something has to change. I'm not sure if human beings are capable of it. So I'm putting hope in artificial intelligence. Okay.
Well, Kevin, I'm out of time. Thank you so much. That's an interesting perspective and something that would have been fascinating to talk about a little bit more in depth. But we are all out of time. Thank you so much to everybody who tuned in. Thank you to Ken Welch for joining us today on the show. Thank you so much to Sean Canan for being our engineer today and to Barbara for wrangling the phones. From all of us here at WMNF Tampa, happy Tuesday.
This is WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM. You may be listening on the WMNF app. Stay tuned next for Harrison Nash has 3 hours of music. And on our HD3 channel, The Source, you can listen to 3 hours of live Tom Hartman on WMNF Tampa.